Welcome to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast, the show that brings you tidbits from all aspects of the soccer world. Sometimes serious, sometimes zany, always opinionated. Now, here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelain.
You are listening to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast. I am your host, Chad Smith. Greetings to you wherever you may be. And now let me bring in my co-host from the Polar Two Daft Yank Studios, Corey Chatelain.
Yeah, happy holidays. Yeah. How's it going? I don't know what's more exciting, the Devin Townsend show I'm going to in a few days, or the fact that Breck Shea's coming back to MLS, apparently.
We'll get to that later. So, do you smell that in the air, Corey?
Ooh.
You smell anything?
It does smell a little weird. Yeah, what is that?
Well, no, it's holiday potpourri.
Oh.
Do you smell that? It's gingerbread and, you know, cinnamon and nutmeg and pine cones and orange and cranberries melding together in a pot. So this is our TDY holiday potpourri show.
Yeah, roasted reindeer.
Yeah, so we're going to give you guys a little something to listen to. Coming up into the holidays here, we're going to talk about a lot of subjects because we will be off next week during Christmas, which is news to Corey, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, well, it works for me because I got to work next week too. So
all right, so get your TDY in while you can before Christmas, and we have a lot to talk about in this potpourri. We're going to talk about Big Sam. We're going to talk about the Yanks. We're going to bring back one of our favorite segments, New and Improved. Then we're going to talk about European Cup Draw Madness, with emphasis on the madness. And then we're going to do a little rapid fire at the end, talking about some things that we could wrap up, time permitting. So with that in mind, sir, are you ready to fire up this studio crowd?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, there was a very, very interesting article before this weekend from WhoScore.com. And the person who wrote it, I don't know if this is like a fake name. It probably isn't, but it's an awesome name. You know, even if this is a pen name, it's still awesome. By Alistair Tweedale. So yeah, that probably is a real British name.
Yeah, I was going to say, if that's not a fake name, that's one of the most British names I've heard in a long time.
Yes. So Alistair Tweedale on WhoScore.com did a team focus on West Ham. And as you know, we've been talking about West Ham quite a bit on the show.
Yeah, they, Sam Alona.
Yes, even after a draw, a disappointing draw for them against Sunderland, fourth place. And we should also note, did you see the horrific sitter that Josie missed in the Sunderland-West Ham game?
Yes, I did.
Oh, my goodness, Josie.
Talking
about...
He just can't score in the EPL for some reason.
I mean, he had an open net, and he, like, somehow managed to only flick the ball up to his hip or something. I don't even know what the hell he did.
Yeah, I mean, we talked last week about Adebayor having a ward around the penalty box. Somebody's placed a druidic ward on Josie where every time he shoots towards the goal, the ball doesn't go in. So, or, you know, he contrives to not even hit the ball, basically.
Yeah. So good, Josie. There was somehow you did something that most people couldn't do, like not even get a shot off with an open net in front of you. Anyway, let's get back to West Ham.
Yeah, well, now we'll just real quickly, he goes into the same category of the greatest American of all time, Landon Donovan, missing sitters inside 3 yards.
Okay. And Wando, I guess, too.
Yeah, I'm just saying, Landon missed a sitter from 2 yards at the back post on one of his loans to Everton once.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
Yes. So let's get into focus on Big Sam here. And at the beginning of the year, I think we both predicted that old Big Sam would be one of the first managers to go because, you know, it was highly publicized in the media that West Ham's chairman and their ownership group wanted to see a more open style of football. And both of us thought that Allardyce would not be able to deliver on that. And so far he has.
Yeah, I mean, we might have to run some bumper music by a Social Distortion here in their song I Was Wrong, because I was wrong about Sam. I thought he, like you said, I thought he wasn't going to be amenable to change, and not only was he open to that change, he's been able to implement it. So, you know, fair play to Big Sam. I know I've bashed him a ton in the past, so, you know, as we've said before, when we're wrong, we'll admit it, so we're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We're wrong so far in Sam.
Yes, and here's the numbers that really jumped out at me about how pragmatic he is. Now, against Manchester City, in a game that they won 2-1, they had 29% of their passes, 29.3% of their passes were considered to be long balls. But against Hull City, which they drew 2-2, that percentage went down, clear down to 11.5%. So basically they show the stats that against, you know, the big teams, he's still playing, you know, 20 to 30% long balls. But when they play teams lower in the table where their talent level is more on equal footing, they're playing more of, you know, the vaunted Sam Alona style that we've been talking about.
Yeah, which is understandable. I mean, as much as we bash teams that play bunker balls, sometimes, you know, unfortunately, it is a necessity because of the talent level you have. But, you know, like you said, I mean, obviously he's playing a much more different style against the teams that would be, as you said, you know, deemed to be in the same class or category of West Ham. So, again, it's one of those, which, you know, we'll get into in a minute, that a lot of time what gets overlooked in somebody's tactics is how you change that to adjust the team you're playing, because, you know, the fact of the matter is most people don't have the top quality just to come out and roll out the same tactic every week and just run with it.
Yeah, so let me just run down some information here for you formation-wise. Now, last year, West Ham used a 4-2-3-1 formation 84% of the time, and then just an alternate formation, a 4-3-3, 7.9%, a 4-2-2-2, 5%, and a 4-4-1-1, 2% of the time. But this year, he's using a 4-1-2-1-2, 46% of the time, and then the 4-2-3-1, 40% of the time. So that shows, you know, the big gap to where he's kind of setting up his team based on who they play. And this so far has gotten West Ham in a great improvement over all their numbers of last year. So we're talking points per game, 1.1 to 1.8. Goals scored per game, 1.1 to 1.7. Goals conceded, 1.3 down to 1.2. Their possession's gone up. Their crosses are the same. They're getting more shots on goal. They're getting more shots on target. More shots per game and more shots on target. And then their overall player rating has been higher as they've skyrocketed and, you know, kind of surprised everybody.
Yeah, and in a more simplistic statistical sense, I can also point out, now granted, I think he was carrying a knock at the beginning of the year, but Big Sam's talismans over the years at a couple of the clubs he's been at, Kevin Nolan has played a lot less this year too, which he's, you know, usually plays that kind of battering ram forward when Carroll wasn't playing, or like I said, when Sam was at Bolton. And again, I definitely know that just my little stat sheets that I keep, you know, with just appearances and goals and assists and the like, Nolan's playing time's far down. But I would point out that he was carrying a knock at the beginning of the year. But lately, a lot of that does have to do with, as you said, the difference in formation, too.
Correct. So I guess my question is, and so just answer this quickly because we need to move on.
All righty.
So we see that he has, no, maybe by force, more likely, that by force he's kind of changed the way he operates tactically and the way he runs his system. And we've seen the positive results. So I guess the general question is, are too many managers too reliant on their system? And should they alter their system to meet the talents of their squad? I mean, that's what a good coach does. Here in the United States, that's what you hear. You know, a good coach in any sport here is someone that adapts their system to meet the talents of their squad. But it sounds like we don't hear that very often in European football.
And I would argue that's what's said, but even though that's what's said here, there's even in sports like American football, there's a ton of coaches that would rather, I mean, not they'll never say this publicly, but they would rather lose in a system that or a defense or an offensive scheme that they're comfortable with than, you know, opening up the floodgates and doing whatever. So like I said, I know that's what's said, but sports coaches as a whole are some of the most conservative, some of the most conservative groups of people around. And I mean that, you know,
like Puritans.
Yes, of course, yes, with the buckle hats and everything. But yeah, that's what I was just about to say. Not conservative politically speaking, but conservative in a definition sense. So with that said, that I think, you know, coaches across the pond and around the world are kind of if not exactly the same. It's an axiom that holds for just most coaches in general. I think that what happens is that they would rather lose. And again, not overtly, but just they would rather play a style that they're comfortable with than losing or, you know, possibly losing or even possibly winning, you know, with a style that they're not comfortable with.
No, I got you. So that's why what Allardyce is doing has got to be highly commended, because he's completely out of his comfort zone, I would say.
Because it's not like he's 40. I mean, he's a fairly old coach, so to do it at that age too is, you know, that's to be commended too. Because like I said, once you've, there could be a little part on Allardyce's part about, you know, he could pull the card of, well, I've been doing this for 20 years. Why do I have to change now? And you know, just walk out basically, and somebody in England would hire him again because, you know, he's fairly well thought of. So like I said, for him to do that at that age is, you know, something to be commended too, because like I said, he could kind of throw back the, you know, his experience in the club's face.
Mm-hmm. And I know something that we talk about that we've talked about in the past is that both of us find it unbelievable that, arguably, but I would say eye test wise, West Ham plays better football right now than both Arsenal and Spurs, which is crazy.
Yes.
Yeah, that's crazy.
We're getting better. Now that we're getting healthy again. But yeah, definitely from August to October, they were definitely playing better than both of us.
Which is insane.
Or a more attractive style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez. I don't know. We should check the sky for horsemen. I'm not sure.
Yeah, or make sure, you know, I didn't step into the TARDIS and land in 1960s England when they were, you know, one of the more attractive sides.
Well, they did win the World Cup, don't you know?
Well, that's what I'm saying, you know.
Yeah, West Ham won the World Cup.
Yeah, I just had to take a quick look and make sure I didn't slip into the TARDIS with Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on over here to more kind of domestic matters. I guess they're not really domestic. They're still international, but they're internationally domestic? I don't know.
Yeah, let's just get to it before you confuse me.
Yes, the U.S. men's national team, basically the bulk of the schedule for next year has been set, rumored, or announced, and so we have a pretty good idea of who we will be playing, in addition to, of course, the 2015 Gold Cup, which the United States will have the opportunity, if they win, they will guarantee themselves a spot in the Confederation Cup the summer before 2018 Russia. But anyway, the schedule is quite challenging, and as we've said, this is the type of schedule we'd like to see just because of the FIFA ranking. and how you take advantage of that by playing South American and European opponents. So let me just run down the list, Corey, of what we have right now. We will be playing Chile and Panama here coming up in January and February. Then in April, I do believe, is Mexico. So a friendly against Mexico is always good to see. And then I don't have the exact dates for these, but Denmark is on the schedule, Switzerland, the Netherlands, Germany, and Brazil. So that's a pretty heavyweight set of games so far that Jurgen Klinsmann has scheduled. So I guess my first question to you is, do you think that this challenging schedule, percentage-wise, how much can we attribute this to Jurgen himself?
Probably a good bit. I would guess at least 75%. Because, obviously he pushes the mantra of wanting his players to, or would prefer his players to go overseas to play. So, for him to back that up on his end of scheduling those kind of, competitive quality opponents, like I said, to me, that's him upholding, his side of the philosophical bargain. Because, who would be the worst team on that schedule? Maybe Denmark or Switzerland, and Denmark still has Christian Eriksen, and Switzerland still has Shaqiri or whatever his name is. So, we'll be facing a lot of quality opposition next year, which, regardless of results, should help us, continue down the road of, developing players, especially the guys that are going to come in, in the new cycle, or the newer guys in the cycle.
Yeah, so every one of those nations made the World Cup except for Denmark. They're on the outside looking in, and then Panama. But, Panama is one of the fastest improving teams within CONCACAF, and they're a team that we've struggled with here recently, especially on the road.
Yeah, and didn't Denmark lose in the playoff too? So it's not like they were...
They're on the fringes.
Yeah, so it's not like they did poorly in qualifying either.
Mm-hmm. And they do have, as you said, Christian Eriksen is their main goal scorer, and he's incredibly young still. So they're going to rebound, I think, in this next cycle.
Yeah, because a lot of their players will be coming to that age, kind of like us, to where, hopefully with us, where they'll be coming into the prime of their careers.
So be ready for – this is a challenging schedule. And with that, our win-loss record, given the state of our pool and given the state of how Klinsmann is trying to, evaluate new players to get ready moving forward, our win-loss record this year could be pretty rough outside of the Gold Cup, which I'd expect us – to probably win again. But Mexico, showed well in the World Cup, so we'll see how they rebound. I'm still not completely sold on them, but we'll see how they get on. But my message here is just be ready for the knives, because, the media still has it out for Klinsmann for whatever reason.
Oh, yeah.
We've heard here many times. So we're going to lose games.
Yeah, there's no doubt our winless. The media
is going to try to stab him in the back.
Yeah, and there's no doubt our win-loss record next year is going to be far worse than last year or the year before. But again, next year is definitely about the quality of opposition, not the results per se.
And as we said before, heck, who knows? Maybe if we, you get some wins, maybe you go 500, your FIFA ranking is going to skyrocket, because as we said, you get full points for playing South American and European opposition. So the chance is there for us to really set a table, to really honestly challenge for a high ranking here in the future.
Yeah, I wouldn't be, semifinal, third place in the Gold Cup, and, 500 next year in the rest of the games, considering the opposition we have. That, to me, that would still be a successful season for the national team next year.
Yes, because it's all about the Gold Cup, obviously, and then evaluating the player pool and finding new players to slot in to areas where we either lack in strength in terms of talent, or in areas where we have, aging players, which is a few bit of positions.
Yeah, because I would be pretty surprised if somebody like Dempsey makes it to the next World Cup.
No, I agree. We're on the record of saying that even...
Yeah, because what, he'll be 30, 34, I think, next time?
Yeah, I think in our Land in Apocalypse, we said, just to give you a hit, folks, when Dempsey's left off the 2018 roster, don't be freaking out. Anyway.
Yeah.
So there we go. So we're, again, I commend Klinsmann for scheduling this. And, you know, it's something that could hurt him. So, you know, a lot of managers who have, you know, a lot of connections aren't willing to schedule these games because if they lose them, they're going to look bad, and therefore they may be fired. So Klinsmann's very comfortable with, you know, his system and who he is. And Ali, again, because he has that role as technical director as well. And I still think people overlook that.
Yeah, which, you know, it's going to be very difficult to fire somebody on results alone next year. Like you said, when he's trying to implement a full top-to-bottom, you know, training program, including the young age groups. And what I read last week, they're now starting a fully national U14 program or something, I think, for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think they've had U14s in the past, but if I remember correctly, it wasn't fully. It was just basically like the select group of kids from certain areas or something. And this will be the first like fully national U14 program or something, which I'm sure we'll get into it at a future date. But just meaning that,
yes,
like I said, it would be, in my opinion, it would be difficult to get rid of Klinsmann just on the results, you know, next year, considering his role as the technical director.
All right. With that, let's space gun this out. And now, Corey, it is that time of the show again.
What time is that?
Two Daft Yanks presents This Week in Daftness.
Braver than a matador in high heels in a pink tutu. Braver than a bullfighter with no knickers on.
How daft.
Oh, ho, ho, ho. We got people with accents on the show now. Maybe somebody will start giving us some respect around here, huh?
Yes, man. We have our fancy new UK announcer lady who we just put on the payroll for pence. She's earning pence.
Yeah.
And, of course, you recognize the rantings and ravings of one Ray Hudson.
Oh, there's only one Ray Hudson, and thank God for that, to be honest.
So there you go. So there's our brand new Christmas Came Early. I was asking for an intro to This Week in Daftness, and now we have one. And so we'll have a lot of fun, you know, altering that intro from time to time with some more up-to-date craziness that we hear from announcers and perhaps managers.
Yeah, I'm just going to throw this out there. I saw JCPenney has a sale on velvet coats. You know, we could be Yanks with accents and coat in velvet coats. Could be a spinoff show or something.
Yanks and velvet?
Yeah, Yanks and velvet.
Ooh, I like it. We're coming for you, Men in Blazers.
Yeah.
Yanks and velvet. Is that red velvet?
We're going to steal your pies. They actually had four different colors.
Oh, really? Red and like green?
Forest green, navy, wine, and black, yes.
Wine. Not red, wine. That is very sophisticated.
Oh, yes. Well, it's a velvet jacket. You know, you can't just have a red velvet jacket.
No,
know?
It's got to be some obscure color name.
Yeah.
I completely
Bordeaux
understand.
Wine Valley color. All right, let's go before I start rambling.
All right, so This Week in Daftness features a Christmas theme for y'all. I don't know. You could call this guy, you know, here in the Telegraph, they call him Bad Santa. We could call him Scrooge if you want to. But it is one of our favorite people, as always, Mr. Harry Redknapp.
Oh, Harry.
And you know what Harry's done this year, Corey?
No, what's Harry got him?
It's an abomination. Harry
what's he got
so
himself
daft.
Up to these days?
Harry, for I think the second year in a row, has canceled the Queen's Park Rangers Christmas party.
Whoa.
Stating,
Scrooge McRedknapp.
Stating that they can't go out and be out drinking because they got a relegation battle to avoid.
Well, we're not going to go out drinking. We're going to drink at the party, Harry. Come on. That's why you have the party.
So Harry is not a big fan of Christmas parties, so he's done this before. And this started at Spurs. And here's a rumor. And this rumor I do believe to be true based off the information I have received in the past. But Harry has canceled Christmas parties before, mainly at Spurs. And what happened is, allegedly one year, one, Robbie Keane got so incredibly drunk, and a lot of the other people, that they were, like, you know, causing a scene and ripping stuff up. And after that, Harry never had a Christmas party at Spurs, and he's extending that to QPR. So, Harry, you're being so daft. You won't let your team enjoy a simple Christmas party because of the, oh, we got to avoid the relegation battle.
Was that did they have an open bar at this Christmas party that Keane got drunk at?
Oh, yes, it was an open bar, no doubt.
Well, there you go. That's just poor tactics on Harry's part. I mean, everybody knows you got to mark the Irishman at an open bar.
You do. Keno is tearing up the MLS, and he'll also tear up your local neighborhood pub.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, that's just poor tactical preparation on Harry's part. Everybody knows that. But, yeah, so with Harry getting canceling Christmas, he's going to be visited by the ghost of bankrupt club's past, relegation present, and transfer bung's future. Oh, Harry, they're coming for you. Oh.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Terrific, sorry.
Yeah, terrific.
I intonated the R. What's wrong with you?
Everybody have a terrific holiday. How can we do that, Harry? You're killing Christmas.
Can you imagine him with – what's the little kid on the crutches
in the story?
Little Timmy?
Yeah.
Tiny Tim?
Yeah.
Bugger off, Tiny Tim.
Yeah, bugger off. No wonder he spends all his time in the reserve. He's on crutches every day. Jeez, Harry, have a heart, man. Come on.
So there we go. This week in Daphnis, QPR has no Christmas party. We grieve for them.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe they could go hang out with Adebayor and his, you know, his juju band.
Well, maybe we should announce this, that we will, if the QPR players want to come to the TDY Christmas party, they could come. I mean, Terabat would be pretty fun to hang out with, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, especially since he knows where all the good food is, where all the good food is these days, according to Harry's, whatever. 3 stone overweight or whatever it is.
All right, there we go. There's this week in Daphnis. Let's all laugh.
You're having a laugh, Harry.
No Christmas, man. Oh, boy. All right, next topic here. And this one is kind of daft, too, so it's good that this follows. It's not an official This Week in Daphnis, but it's something that I've noticed over the years, and we've never discussed it, so... European Cup draw is coming up. We just had the FA Cup draw, too, I think a week or two ago. But anyway, so it was supposed to be Friday, and one of our goals was to, you know, talk about the, you know, the Champions League Cup draw and the Europa League Cup draw, but they moved it to Monday. So we're recording this on Sunday, and this won't come out until Sunday or Monday, so we apologize. But this is an interesting topic. As I said, I've noticed over the years that the European club supporters are mental when it comes to these draws. They would rather draw a team or a club. They'd rather draw a club in a nice locale where they could have a good, you know, 3-day weekend at and lose than to play a team in a place they don't want to visit and win. That's completely insane to me. It's not about winning or losing to these people. It's all about having a good day, a good away day, or a good day out.
Well, yeah, unless you're Liverpool's case, and then, you know, the one time you win when you're not champions, you know, you're gonna bash that over everybody's head for the next 20 years. But yeah, that's as I was telling you before we came on the air, as rational as Arsblog usually is, even he on his podcast this week was talking about how he kind of hopes we draw Barcelona because that would be the best day out of the clubs that are left. So Now, granted, you know, he's going under the assumption that no matter who we draw, we're going to lose anyway, so he would rather go to a place like Barcelona because, according to him, it is the best out day left. Because he mentioned Porto, and I don't know, it seems like Porto being on a, you know, being a coastal city might be kind of fun, but, you know, I've never been there, so I don't know. But yeah, so that's my anecdotal validation of your point, is that even the rational bloggers seem to think this too.
Now, here's my cup draw philosophy. I want the weakest team possible. There we go. Done.
Yeah.
I want my team to advance. Now, I understand if you traveled all the games, sure, it'd be great. And I could see the draw. You know, not the draw, but the draw, especially living in Northern Europe, to going to, you know, someplace like Spain or Portugal or Italy in the winter, in the dead of winter. I could see where a lot of people would want that trip.
Yeah, and then you get people that will say, well, oh, it should be, you know, you should have to play the best competition on your way to the title, blah, blah, blah. You know, unless it's your club, of course, then everybody boo-hoos about whoever they draw. But my comeback to that argument is always, yeah, when somebody calls you a weak champion, weak is the adjective. Champion is the noun. I would rather be a weak champion than a strong loser. So, you know, if we have to play the strong teams, that's fine. But, you know, if a club wins, if it's my club and we win because of a weak schedule, trust me, I ain't going to complain.
There we go. That's, I don't know. What do they say? Jim Rome says, let's rack them. Let's rack them with the doorbell. There we go. Good job.
Yeah, well, if you're quoting Jim Rome, that's, you know, you and him can hang out all you want.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, sadly, I used to listen to him when I was a youth.
King of the bros.
When I was a youth, and I thought that he was, you know, cool and stuff, but now he's just a pathetic old man with a bad goatee.
Oh, come on, he had Blink-182 on a show once. He's like hip.
Oh, boy. So there you go. So if you have any thoughts on cup draws, let us know. I don't, as I said, I don't understand this. I understand, you know, the draw of going to an exotic locale that you've never been, but I'd rather have my team win than have a good vacation. You could take a vacation anytime.
Yeah, because it's not like, you know, people in England don't have a bank holiday every 3 weeks.
That's true. They have a lot of holidays they can travel.
I mean, come on. How many holidays do you people need?
Yeah, I think there's more bank holiday Mondays than there aren't, it seems like.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, everybody hates the bankers, except they take all their holidays off, though. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, bank holiday, though.
That's a good point. I like that. I'm about to bring that up.
Down with the bankers, but keep their holidays. just saying, though, seriously, they have, like, a bank holiday every 3 weeks, it seems like.
All right, let's move on here. We made our point there.
Yeah. Yeah, let's move on before we alienate the snobs that we like.
Yes, now here is the big news of the day. In the future world's most elite league,
MLS.
Which is ran by the Garbatron, of course.
Yes.
So what is the big news out of MLS today, Corey?
Apparently, one time, you know, U.S. soccer legend in waiting, Breck Shea, is moving back to MLS with Orlando City.
Did I hit the laugh button?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure if it was a joke or not. but, yeah, so apparently he's leaving the dark kingdom of Mordor, Stoke-on-Trent, and coming back to sunny Florida to play with Kaká. It's going to be funny, though, when he walks into the locker room and introduces himself to Kaká, and Kaká asks who the hell he is.
Yeah, who are you?
Because you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know.
What's wrong with your hair?
Yeah, or, oh, yeah, oh, I thought you were the team artist.
Yeah. My goodness. So, now, I can't remember, but I'm pretty sure this podcast was going when he went from from Dallas to Stoke, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so I do believe that I was the ringleader saying, MLS, what the hell are you doing selling the America's most, you know, talented or futurely talented, you know, the most talented young player with potential who plays the wing position to a team that doesn't use wings? That makes no sense to me at all. So all you people who are bashing on Breck Shea for failing, in quotes, in Europe, you can blame Garber because they sold him to the wrong club. That's an MLS fault. And don't say, no, it's not the league's fault. No, it is, because the league has to approve every sale. And that was wrong for them to do that.
Yeah, because, again, that's one of those points where Garber can be shown to be a hypocrite because, we want young guys to stay in the MLS, and I don't like Klinsmann saying they should go to Europe to play, but, we'll sell a player that's a bad fit, you know, when it's a big profit for us.
Exactly. That's all it came down to. They made a pretty penny on him, and now he's back. And so any delay in his – no, obviously, some of that does go on him. But the league has to be smart enough to sell players in positions that they can be successful in. Now, if that's the way it is – now, I wish the clubs were able to do this, and the clubs, you know, would be a lot more open to doing the right thing. But since the league controls every player, that's the problem we have. So that's just the reality. So Breck Shea hasn't developed these past few years. And some of that is on him, but a lot of it is on MLS.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, MLS kind of has a FIFA kind of turns a blind eye to MLS a bit. But I would, you know, even though I don't like when people abuse the court system to have frivolous lawsuits, it would be interesting to see what would happen if somebody did a Bosman type of situation that happened in the 90s in Europe, and somebody that's an MLS player take the league to FIFA and some sort of judicial court and basically sue the league, because everywhere else that's illegal for a something other than a club to hold the contract other than the kind of stuff that goes on Brazil and a couple other Latin countries where you have like sports marketing firms that own percentages of players, but that's how they get around that, is that they only own a percentage and they don't own the full, you know, player rights.
Correct.
Like I said, it would be interesting to see what would happen if somebody tried to do a Bosman and basically take the league to court and, you know, say, hey, FIFA, enforce your laws, you know.
I got the perfect lawyer. And mine. You ready?
Who's that?
Jackie Childs. No, Jackie Childs. Yeah.
If you kick the ball, you must pay a windfall.
Yeah, there we go.
You know, he's got to. You know, you always got to have some. You know, some rhyme and catchphrase.
Yeah, Jackie Childs.
Yeah, if you are good at kicking a ball, you must pay a windfall. Please do not fur. Please make a transfer.
So and also remember that Breck Shea came out and said, no, I think he learned a lot over there, because he came out with those quotes not too long ago saying, you know, yeah, playing soccer in Europe is like a real job, to where in MLS it's like just hanging out with your friends, which is still one of the funniest quotes I've ever heard, just to show you the level where the league's at. That's not us saying that. That is an actual player.
Yeah, which hopefully he – you know, as you're implying, hopefully he uses that to then come back to MLS and better himself, and then not use that basically to run away from England. Not saying that he is running away from England, but just meaning hope he doesn't come back and then revert to the non-job, you know, kind of mindset.
Yeah, so Breck Shea is soon to be an Orlando City Lion. And I wonder if he'll do the mohawk and then dye it purple. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, the mane. There was already some mane. Speak English. There was already some mane memes floating around on Twitter.
Oh, really? Okay, so I haven't seen. So cool.
Yeah.
We'll have to check that out. All right, next topic here. Today, Liverpool fell to Manchester United 3-0 at Old Trafford. And we are hearing that this is now Liverpool's worst start in 50 years.
Half a century. Oof.
Well, that is half a century.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds. You know, Brendan Rodgers came out with this delusional. His quotes post-game, he came out today and said that the better team lost.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure.
I mean,
okay, Brendan.
They certainly didn't play poorly, or I didn't think they played poorly, but you're kind of stretching the truth a pretty good bit to say that you were the better team.
Yeah, so I don't think he does himself any favors there. And, of course, they crashed out of the Champions League this week with a draw to Basel. Swiss side bottle. Yeah, it was a heroic draw. That's true. So I guess my question to you with this in mind. Oh, and also Minole, as is someone, I don't know if we talked about him a little last week or maybe privately we have. Minole has been benched.
Indefinitely.
So that's pretty interesting. But I guess my question is, do you think Brendan Rodgers is any under pressure for his job, given the fact that, you know, the Liverpool ownership was really targeting advancing in the Champions League and they didn't make it out of the group stage?
Yes, because, I mean, obviously he is under some pressure. I think this is one of those rare cases where actually having American ownership may actually hurt Rodgers a little. Because, like you said, they were targeting that Champions League tournament mainly because of the money. So the fact that they don't have that, I think, you know, John Henry and his crew is going to take a pretty dim view of that. If he doesn't get results soon, you know, as we were talking in private a few days ago, I think he might actually get canned, and it would certainly be one of the fastest falls from grace, for an EPL manager that I can remember, you know, maybe going back to, when Newcastle fired Keegan in the late 90s after he failed to win the title, when he had that infamous collapse where he snapped on air at some comment Ferguson made, and, you know, he was basically shown to be that the pressure was getting to him. I actually think that, you know, if there was an English or a British ownership of Liverpool, I think Rodgers would definitely be given to the end of the season. But I think with John Henry's group, I could see situations where they might get rid of him before the end of the season.
Yeah, ring up Kane Kenny.
Yeah,
get him back out there.
Come back, Kane Kenny. Save us again. Hey, and Andy Carroll's fit and possibly available in January. Who knows?
Oh, jeez, I've heard that. I've actually heard those rumors reported in newspapers that Liverpool is open to the return of Andy Carroll.
Oh, see, I didn't hear that. I was just joking.
Yeah.
You know, I just read that. Yeah, well, see, I was just going on the thing. Well, he's fit and Rodgers might be fired, so buy him again, Liverpool.
I know, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, pair him with Balotelli. Although I will say, in Balotelli's defense today, he's just in that phase now where he just can't buy a goal.
Yeah, he hit the woodwork today.
He hit the woodwork, and De Gea pulled off a pretty fantastic save on another shot.
Mm-hmm. So Liverpool's interesting to see. And as I said, if Brendan Rodgers wouldn't run his mouth, he wouldn't be in so much trouble. I mean, this summer, you know, he said, oh, we're not going to pull a Tottenham, in reference to the summer before when, you know, Spurs sold Bale, got $100 million, you know, spent all the money. He said, oh, if you spend $100 million, you should be, you should be challenging for the league title. Well, guess what happened this summer? Liverpool spent $100 million, and they're crashing and burning because they didn't upgrade their defense. Anyway.
Yeah, well, that, and I think one of the things that some people aren't saying or maybe not noticing that Personally, I think Brendan Rodgers kind of fell in love with the Liverpool romanticism, and then after their second place finish last year, just kind of thought that, you know, that 80s ideal of Liverpool when they were the kings of Europe, that it was just going to, you know, with the second place finish and then spending the money to bring in the new players, and then with that kind of unsaid media love of Liverpool, I think he just kind of fell in love with that and thought it was going to be enough to where they were just going to automatically, you know, not saying that they thought that they were going to be able just to show up and play, but I think that I think he kind of thought that, well, teams are going to start to fear Liverpool now, and we'll just push on from here.
Yeah, the EPL isn't plug and play, Brendan.
Yeah, and it's certainly not, you know, the quality of play is, you know, much, or the quality of clubs are just much better than it was in the 80s and even the 90s. You know, I mean, as we say, you know, ad nauseum on this show, you know, even the bad clubs in the Premier League are still pretty decent talent. You know, they still have decent amount of talents to still be competitive.
Yeah, so, but still, obviously, there's plenty of time for any club to turn things around, especially with all the fixtures coming up in this holiday season. So Liverpool will be a club to monitor.
Yeah, because, like you said, you know, the table's tight enough where you pull off three or four victories in a row, you could easily go from, you know, which I forgot exactly where Liverpool is at the moment, but, you know, it's the kind of table right now where if you pull off four wins in a row, you can move up from 14th to 6th, you know?
Yeah, Liverpool is currently in 10th on 21, and then I guess 4th and 5th are at 28 and 26. So they're, you know, 5 points out of 5th.
Yeah, so if they pull off four wins in a row, they could, you know, all of a sudden they're back in the European places.
Correct. So we'll see what happens. All right, well, that's going to wrap up. I guess the only other announcement we have is if you go on to Twitter, at @2DAFYanks, you'll get to see our new avatar, which is our brand new alternate logo, which looks pretty awesome, if you ask me.
Yeah, I like the racing stripes design.
Yeah, it's modern, yet retro. You know, it's that new popular look. It's modern, but it looks like a soccer logo from like the 70s.
Yeah, and that's what it looks like, the old 60s, early 70s racing stripes like in Formula One.
Mm-hmm. So it was pretty cool. So you could go to 2daftyanks.com. There you could go in the shop and you can get a t-shirt of that logo for just $15.
Pick you up a shirt and, you know, get a pat on the back from us.
Yeah,
and then at some point we'll have Eurosnob shirts, hopefully.
Oh, that's a good idea. We should design that. Ooh, good idea, Corey.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, well, you know, you could have TDY, I'm a Euro snob, or
well,
something,
like,
you know.
Yeah, or just Euro snobs. Yeah, that's. I'll get our design team on that. But yeah, so go to 2daftyanks.com, go to the shop, and all kinds of colors, you can get your new TDY.com logo, which looks awesome. It's a perfect stocking stuffer for yourself. Give a gift to yourself this Christmas.
Yeah.
So, all right, well... again, thank you for listening this week and as well as last week in our very good show where we got a lot of feedback again with our interview with Alexis Guerreros, who was a joy to talk to. And, yeah, go ahead, Corey.
Yeah, no, I was just saying that I finally, after talking to him, I was craving pizza all week, so I had my pizza fixed earlier today before I went to work. So
nice.
Yeah, Moose's Tooth. If you're ever in Anchorage, Alexis, go to Moose's Tooth. It's pretty, you know, it's not New York pizza, but it's pretty damn good.
All right, folks. So remember, we will be off next week for the Christmas holiday, but we will be back after to talk about all the insanity, you know, with the Boxing Day games and then the games that weekend. And then, so we'll have a lot to talk about when we come back after Christmas.
Yeah, and hopefully I'll be conscious after the Devin Townsend show on Wednesday. So, you know, I might go, you know, either I'm going to rock so hard my face is going to melt off, or I might go into a coma from rocking so hard. But So hopefully I'll be out of that by the next time we come on.
Yeah, I hope so too. So, all right. So for Corey Chatelain, I'm Chad Smith. This has been the Two Daft Yanks podcast. Everybody have a wonderful holiday, and we'll talk to you after.
Welcome back, Mr. Shea, Mr. Carter.
This has been the Two Daft Yanks podcast. If you like the show, be sure to find the Yanks at TwoDaftYanks.com or at TwoDaftYanks on Twitter. There, you can stay up to date on all the Two Daft Yanks action by subscribing to the show.